Hey everyone, and welcome back to the Adopting and Fostering Home Podcast. Wherever you are on your fostering or adopting journey, we're here to provide the resources and tools you need. And I think today's guest will be a great source of encouragement to you. We are going to continue our conversation today with Callie Rich. Callie's the mom of seven. She left a nursing profession and kind of transferred that to the home. She never really, like me, never meant to be the mom of a large family, but the Lord just kind of navigated that for her. And so I think you'll enjoy part two with Callie Rich today. Callie, everyone makes fun of me because they're like, hey, if you're thinking about adoption, or go talk to Lynette and she'll talk you out of it. And so it's not that I want to talk people out of it. I want everyone to, you know, if the Lord's leading them, I want to help them on this journey if they need encouragement or help with paperwork, whatever, prayer, you know. And I've heard you guys say that you firmly believe everyone should be involved in adoption, but not everyone should maybe adopt. And yes. I understand what you mean by that, but how are other ways that you've, like, maybe you've had a family come to you and you realize this may not, you know, you may not be ready for this journey or whatever, you know, you don't want to come out and say that, but how do you kind of cheer people along to stay involved?
You know, we say that some people, their calling in relation to adoption is to support another adoptive family in their journey.
Yeah.
Be that financially or offering further support. As you know, the attrition for foster families is really high because a lot of really great families get burned out when they don't have adequate support around them.
Mm-hmm.
With simple tasks like laundry or running errands or getting a child to this therapy appointment, it can be very demanding.
Yeah.
And so I think there are plenty of ways to support adoption without actually being the adoptive family. And you're right. We think adoption is beautiful and wonderful. And also, in order to raise healthy children, we need to consider what our limitations are, you know, on when to say now is not the time, or we're not in a good space to be able to adopt the children ourselves. But there are ways that we can support them growing into the healthy individuals that God designed them to be.
Yeah, when Kevin pastored in Louisville, we just saw adoption foster care explode in our church community. And there were several times that there were families who just didn't feel God was calling them to adopt or do foster care. But I saw so many times that that family was able to write a huge check for another family that was just absolutely walking by faith, dollar for dollar, you know, to complete this process. And another family was able to step in and say, we can support you financially. And most of the time without a name, they didn't want a face to their name. They didn't want to be known. But God really laid that on their heart. But like you said, there are so many ways we could help. Most of our listeners know that. They're the helpers and the doers. But we just always want to use discernment in that and be aware of that. We don't want to say every single person should do this. You know, every family in the church should do this. But every family in the church does have a part to play. But I want to kind of shift gears here. So you guys are you're a multiracial family, and you guys share about being culturally competent. Man, I just love the way you phrase that. Tell me what you and Jonathan mean when you say be culturally competent.
Well, you know, when you make the decision to adopt transracially, you are making that decision and you feel like you can handle it, but your child that you're adopting has not chosen to be adopted transracially.
That's right.
And when they grow up and they are launched into the world and out of your home, the world does not see them under the blanket of your home or your family. They see them with the racial or cultural identity that they present in the world. And so in order to really raise emotionally healthy individuals for the world, we really think it's important that our children have cultural competence in the culture of their origin, not just the culture of their parents. And so I think that changes for every adoption scenario. For us, that's African American culture in our family. And so we feel very confident that you have to lean in. You have to have members of your community, your friends, the people you go to school with, in your neighborhoods, at your churches, that can be those adults that look like your children, that can lean into them, that your children can see examples of people that look like them in their spheres. And that's different depending on what race or ethnicity your child is coming from, but learning to be a student of your child's culture and learn it with them, do the work beforehand, and know, like, what are you equipped for? What is your community equipped for?
Yeah.
In order to give them that complete identity.
Yeah, because like you said, I love the way you say the child didn't choose, like, your kids didn't choose to be in an all-white, you know, didn't choose white parents, right? And
right.
So, and
they did not.
Yeah, same for mine. And so, you know, I have to be willing to do the extra work.
Exactly. And if we have to be honest with ourselves and say that's a disadvantage for our children.
Yeah.
And that is a loss to not be able to be raised in their culture of origin, even though we all love our family, you know?
Yeah.
So being able to be honest about that. And I think people need to be honest about what their limitations are.
Yeah.
We've been raised to think, oh, well, love is enough. If I just, I'll love any child, which is probably true. But the question is not, will you love them? But are you capable of giving them what they need to be a fully formed, you know, functioning adult?
That's right. And that's a huge responsibility on the parents' shoulders. That's really stepping out of, it's really stepping out of our comfort zones, you know. It's really just taking, I was trying to think of how you all, I heard you say a really good exercise for parents is to go into a setting in which you are the other, which you
Absolutely.
Are other. Yeah. So you mean by that, like what? Like?
Well, I think especially for white parents adopting children of other races, growing up in America or living in America, we live in a predominantly white culture. And so we don't often have the experience of seeing spaces and places through the lens of being other.
Mm-hmm.
Because the majority of places we enter in America, white culture is dominant.
Mm-hmm.
So one thing I encourage potential transracial adoptive parents to do is put themselves in a scenario where they feel other culturally, racially, so they can understand the perspective of a child or an individual living in majority culture. One of the best examples, I think, is to go to a church where you're the only white person and or your family's the only white family. Because what happens is the church will be incredibly loving and welcoming. There may be some nuances that are a little bit different from the way that, you know, the cultural expressions
right.
that you're used to in that same setting. You may be a little uncomfortable. Like, I don't know, are we supposed to stand now? Do we greet? You know, how do we handle this? And then when people approach you and they're nice and they talk to you, you will think to yourself, they're really nice. Are they being nice? Just because they're nice or because it's very clear that I'm an outsider here.
Mm-hmm.
And to understand that perspective is to understand that of a child that's being raised in transracial family, if they're only allowed to be in an environment that is predominantly majority culture or white, you know, to feel those rubs of, I'm just a little bit different.
Yeah.
Or I just don't know, you know, there's so many small experiences and microaggressions that an individual can face. Like if someone were to say, oh, I don't think of you as Black.
Mm-hmm.
I think of you as one of us,
which is
a very well-intentioned and horrible statement.
Yes.
Because what that communicates is I don't fully see you as you.
That's right.
And so our children need to be in spaces where they can feel fully seen and fully embraced and not other all the time.
Right.
You know?
Right. I just think that's a great way to explain that. And I talk a lot about being the adult in the room. And this is absolutely an area in which it's not about me, it's about my child. And my child can't be an adult because they're a child. And I've got to be the adult in the room on this issue.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I've got to take steps to maybe doing things that, like you said, rubs me a little and makes me be the other. You shared before that you really, why you like to open adoption is you want to enter into those relationships with your kids now. Because with social media, they're going to find those families. Like
they absolutely are. Well, and we also don't want them to feel like it's duplicit or they have to choose one family or another. With adoption, as you know, it's beautiful and redemptive and also messy. And there's loss. We just had a conversation around our dinner table last night with one of our children discussing, sometimes I wonder what it would be like to live in that home. And those are conversations that are not threatening in our house. And we encourage our children to have them because it's possible. Well, with adoption, you have to hold joy and grief side by side. You cannot separate them. If someone has told you that it's only beautiful or only joyful, then it's a diminished perspective of the richness, but also the heaviness of adoption. And so we tell our children, this is a safe space. You can be fully grateful that you're a part of our family and also grieve that you're not living in your birth family. Mm-hmm. And there's space to hold both of those things side by side. They're not mutually exclusive. So we have those conversations and we want to enter into the relationship with their birth families with them because we don't want them to grow up and feel like, well, do I need to spend this holiday with this family or that family? We spend them together, you know? So, and that's been our solution so far is that we have spent major holidays together as one larger family instead of two. But even for our children who are biologically linked to other siblings, and then the ones that aren't, we want all of them to be in relationship together so that when they grow up, our daughter isn't like, oh, I want to have a sister's weekend. Do I have that with my biological sister or do I have it with the sister I grew up with? What does that mean? But if they're all in relationship, then they all share in that sisterhood instead of her feeling like she has to choose one direction or another.
Mm-hmm. You know, going back to what you said earlier, as parents, we have to do the extra work on this. And these kids are going to launch one day and they're going to launch as an adult, a young adult of their race and not coming from white parents or, you know, no one's going to know that, you know, about them. I know our daughter who's Asian, she went to college last year and just watching her navigate that and people's questions about her family and seeing her family picture and all that you have to ready them for that, like your conversation at the dinner table last night, which I love family dinner. I think it's a lost art, but I really fight for it at least 3 nights a week. And that's about as good as it gets for us right now. But that's when the conversations come out and kids kind of can feel that openness. I often say that as they become teenagers, they don't love so much the you looking at them when they're talking, you know, they go through that awkward stage about middle school or preteens and shoulder to shoulder, driving somewhere, doing something fun together has also been a great time for us as well to be able to have those open conversations. I know my son started one. He came home when he was 12 and he just found that with my dad, my dad, when he was still living and when they were driving, he just felt that connection with my dad and he would really start opening up about bad memories or things he was struggling with. So like I said earlier, I've heard you say, and I say it too, that adoption has been the best journey of your life. And I totally agree, all mine. I've got one, like I told you, I've got a senior left at home. She launches soon. I've just been doing this 31 years. I can't even wrap my head around it yet, Callie. I just really can't. But speaking of journeys, man, you guys have really been traveling as a large family.
Yes. My husband and I prioritize travel. That's how we love to see the world and gain perspective from people in different places. And when we started to set family goals, we were talking about what you were talking about, attached family. And we kept hearing people do certain things to try and have shared memories for their kids.
Yeah.
We were like, well, how do we want to do that? And for us, we said, well, let's set goals. We decided we are going to see all 50 states together as a family.
Oh, that is great.
So it's wonderful. Yeah, we started, I guess, when we had our fourth daughter was one. And so we have a few states to catch up for the littlest ones. But we're at 44 out of 50 states now.
And so you just, I know you even posted too, like you've been to, is it 22 national parks?
Yes, 22 national parks.
Wow.
Our very first national park, I believe, was Acadia in Maine. And when we went there is when we discovered the treasure that are national parks. So we prioritize them now in a lot of our states, making sure that we get to see those.
Yeah, yeah. We the few times we've gotten to do that, I'm always like, I mean, I remember being in the Hoover Dam and I'm thinking, what? How did I not know to come here years ago? But and then fourth graders get free passes. Do they still get that at our national parks?
Yes, our national parks offer free passes for fourth graders. So you just go fill out a paper, really simple online, print it out and take it to the gate and they'll give you a card that's good from September 1st of fourth grade year all the way through to the following.
Man, that's good to know. That is just, that's great. Now, I know I have to tell you this. When I'm packing for my kids, I had some I could depend on. And then I had some who would just pack like a pair of ball shorts and like nothing, candy bars, you know, or something like that. And so you do this. I just want to go over kind of how you get ready for your trips. I know sometimes you're driving in the van. And sometimes you're flying, but trips with kids, I like this part. But you, one of the first things you do, I just want to talk through this a minute, you line up rows for each child.
Yes. Well, you know, I might forget anything but the ball shorts if I didn't do it that way.
Same, yeah.
Yes. Well, we found that, you know, minimizing how much we take actually creates more success in our travel. So if we're traveling to one location, say if we're going to the beach, we will take only three outfits per child, as long as there's laundry there, because otherwise it just ends up a giant laundry bomb at whatever rental condo. If we are traveling longer distances, then we have to pack more than three outfits if we can't get to laundry. But we try and pack as few as possible. I line them all up, and then we pack usually if we're on a road trip, then we pack according to destination instead of by person. So instead of having each child with their own bag, we'll say, this is the bag for Kansas. This is the bag for Montana.
So when you make a stop, you just pull out the Kansas bag
Yeah. Otherwise we're hauling in so much stuff. It already feels like so much going in.
Yeah. So you line up rows for each child like their outfits. So you say you put three outfits together and then you say you roll each complete outfit with the socks hanging out. So you roll it up. I know this sounds simple. I mean, I should know this. I get it. But I just think people are going to enjoy hearing this. So you roll them up with the socks hanging out and then you just, what do the socks do?
You kind of tie fold them back over that outfit and creates a complete outfit. So yes, that is the method I used for a really long time. I still do sometimes, but I also got someone put me onto the packing cubes, which are available everywhere. They are fantastic. So we use those, which they're a huge lifesaver to keep everything from exploding when you open a suitcase, and it helps us really organize. And yes, we fold a complete outfit together for the child. So in a packing cube, say there will be seven complete outfits already folded up together like that.
In one cube?
In one cube. Oh, yeah.
Wow, that's great. And then I know when you're, so the packing cube goes into the suitcase if you're flying, but if you're driving, do you still put them all in a duffel bag or a suitcase?
If we are flying, we put them all, the packing cubes into a suitcase. Or if we're flying the discount airlines into a backpack.
Yeah, I guess you could that way because some of yours are getting big enough now to help carry a backpack.
So yeah.
That's cool.
And when it's in the cube, it doesn't get, you know, when they open the backpack, their underwear doesn't fall out.
Oh, I know. It's not embarrassing for them, I know. But when you're driving the van, I know you do baby potties. You keep those in the van. We'll talk about big van travel here for just a minute because this is common with our listeners here on the Adopting and Fostering podcast. They, a lot of them are large families, and they like to travel. And you do, like, baby potties you take out of the van and pull over if you have to. I mean, because kids aren't going to wait on that.
That's right. We learned a long time ago to always have a baby potty available in our car. But with COVID hitting, it really reinforced the need for the baby potty. And now we upped it. We take two because we were like, wow, this is taking too long to cycle everyone through the same potty. So we have two stackable potties that stay in our car.
I love this. Yeah.
And they can sit out just outside the car because if, you know, if you're filing everybody into a gas station for a long time, that wasn't even safe, you know, or they didn't have bathrooms open during COVID. So we had to pivot for that. And then we just realized, wow, it's much faster with little toddlers to just set them on the baby potty side by side.
So, and then you do a shoe bin. How does that work? Do you have a shoe bin in the van while you're traveling?
Yes.
Just a container?
Yes. That was something new we did this summer and it was fantastic. We were doing a lot of hiking. So we learned before you can't take just one pair of shoes because if they get wet and it takes them a while to dry out, it's really a problem. So we took hiking boots, tennis shoes and flip-flops, and everybody's shoes all stayed in the same bin in the back of the car. So at any point that we needed to switch it out, we had them available and nobody left their shoes at the house, which is also a very common problem.
Yeah, it is. It is. I went back home one time to visit my parents when my kids were little and one had two left shoes. So somehow I bought two left shoes. So, things happen with shoes. She wore her socks to church that morning because they live in a small town. And, I mean, I didn't realize it, till that morning. So, yeah, shoes can be a thorn in the flesh for sure.
We have left the house and said, how did you get in the car without shoes?
Exactly. Exactly. Well, and I know the last trip you added, which I love, I want to get one of these, you added like a dog carrier in the back of the van.
Yes.
So, how does that work? That would be a game changer, I think, for a large family.
So we drive a 15-passenger van, and because of that, in the cargo space, there's nothing to divide it besides this headrest. And to maximize the amount of space, because it goes up pretty high, we decided to get one of the dog barriers, even though we don't have a dog, and use it. It, uses tension between the ceiling and the floor, and allowed us to pack the lighter materials like jackets and pillows back where they wouldn't fall onto the kids forward, but also wouldn't be a danger if, it fell forward.
Yeah. I love that idea.
Really improved our packing efficiency.
So when you put kids on a flight, you do like a buddy system?
Oh,
in seats?
The last time we flew, we had a 7-day-old baby and that was our sixth child. And I don't think that, we did fly one more time since then. But yes, we don't fit in one row anymore. So it's kind of like mom and dad prioritize the younger people or who might need help. And then the oldest kid gets assigned someone on the row with them that they're kind of in charge of.
Yeah. Well, I think it's great that you're just like the lemonade stand, going to the national parks and realizing, we're just building fun together as a family. And, every day just building those memories for them to saying that, we're together forever. We're a team. We stick together and we're in this. We're in this together and we're going to go have some adventures together. That does an incredible that takes you a long way down the road with attachment with your kids. And I just love that picture of you doing that. And I've enjoyed kind of watching it. But you've really thought out this organizational thing. There again, your nursing background.
Truly, I mean, it has served
give
me.
It into play. Because you probably pack Tylenol and you've got all that ready too, right? First aid kits and that sort of thing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Time management, learning to do things with two hands when you need three. These are all things you learn from nursing.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Well, thanks for your time today, Callie. I'm so grateful for you and Jonathan and how you guys share. And we will be looking for more fun posts for you on Instagram. And man, we just love your family and we just appreciate you sharing today.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
I really appreciate you joining me today on the Adopting and Fostering Home podcast, which is a ministry of Sin Relief. If you enjoyed today's episode, share it with a friend, and you can find more information and subscribe at sinrelief.org. Thanks for listening and making us a part of your adoption and foster care journey.